she's good. She's very good. And she brought a cream pie.
PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. Welcome to the bunker. It's March the 30th.
Of
2006.
Yeah, that's 3-3. Huh? And 06, which is another couple of threes. So sort of a hidden 33-33.
It is.
And
or if you want to get really fancy, you could have 2 over 6, which is 1/3. Which is 0.33333333.
But more importantly, as Sharon pointed out just before the broadcast tonight, it's Thursday, which of course is pitch-in night here in the bunker. So we're hoping for lots of pies.
That's right. We're sitting here, and we've got our utensils with us. We've got little napkins tied around our necks jauntily, and we've set our tinfoil hats aside for the grilling later.
Yes.
And we're just looking forward to whatever you brought. We hope for lots of pies.
Lots of pies. Yes. And beautiful day here in St. Louis today, which has got us in the mood for grilling. In fact, we can, with the doors and windows open here, we can smell our neighbors. Buying into those Beef Council ads because it's what's obviously what's for dinner next door.
Oh, it smells so good.
Yeah.
We had quesadillas and chili, though, so I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, but 77 degrees here in St. Louis. No, not yet anyway, which is about, what, about 15 centigrade?
77?
Something like that. Yeah, 77 was the high today. 77. Another 11 multiple, wasn't it? Well,
games people play. Speaking of games.
Yes.
Iran.
War games.
They're planning some games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they've got a picnic plan to go along with it.
Yeah. See, now, today you mentioned games. I was thinking, okay, spring training, Cubs, trying to cut down the 25-man roster. No, not that kind of game. But it is springtime when young men's hearts turn to thoughts of baseball. They've got a series of games planned, which is going to involve a good portion of their military, and they're bringing it right out into the Persian Gulf. When they've got their Navy there and our Navy there, based in Bahrain, which is just opposite Iran in the Gulf, the situation potential exists anyway for accidental conflict.
You don't think so?
Well,
really?
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Bahrain and our Navy, this is really kind of sad. There's a ferry disaster, a ferry sinking, that so far has cost the lives of 44, which is also a multiple of 11, sadly. Mm-hmm. 44 people, and the Fifth Fleet has been helping out with it.
Yeah, the boat carried about 150 people. On the coast of Bahrain, it sank just off the coast of Bahrain. 44 bodies have been recovered, but more are still missing. So that death toll may climb.
Oh,
52 survivors. 52 survivors have been confirmed. But our prayers are with the rescuers and of course with the families of those who are yet missing.
You know, I'm curious to hear the story on this because I think oftentimes these ferries are overloaded and that's the problem. And sometimes they're just not well maintained, but. I'd like to know, 150 people doesn't sound like overloaded.
No, but of course that depends on the size of the boat.
Yes, so. That's true.
Well, let's see. What have we got going on in the news tonight?
Well, Jill Carroll was freed today.
That's some good news. Yeah.
That's a huge, huge answer to prayer for many of us.
She really looked distressed during some of the videotaped messages that had been sent out. Now, she's saying now that she had been treated reasonably well, which is thankful because... As a father with a daughter, I can only guess what might have been going through her father's mind during this period while she's been in captivity.
Right, but understand that she, the interview that she gave today was on Baghdad television.
Mm-hmm.
She was still, if I were in her shoes, I would think, once I'm on U.S. soil, I'll feel safe again.
Yeah, yeah.
And so... You know, she may have been treated extremely well, but I know that she did sound, as you say, very, very stressed.
Right.
And she made the comment today that They never harmed her. They never hit her. They never tried, even acted like they were going to hit her, never said they were going to hit her. They only said they were going to kill her. She left that out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Number of times they said they were going to kill her.
Right. And that is the point that I was, you know, leading towards, that
Sorry.
There was quite a... Well, no, that, no, you're right. You're right, though. That is an excellent observation, that there was a definite difference in the way she was behaving today and what we saw on the videotapes that were released. And you're right. While she's still in Baghdad and was giving a videotaped interview on Baghdad television, she is likely to say something, likely to downplay the more stressful aspects of her captivity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she will write a book at some point. She is a writer, after all.
Oh, yeah.
And it will be an interesting story that she has to tell once she's back home and with her family. But again, as a father of a daughter who is approaching the age where she's going to be out on her own,
mm-hmm.
and is also
a
young...
She can easily become a journalist.
Right, because she does enjoy writing and she's got a curious mind. She is the type of person who may decide for that this is a career choice that she'd like to make.
She's a great writer.
So, yeah, she is. And thanks in no small part to your guidance and tutelage.
So, I think God gave her talent. That's what it amounts to.
Well, speaking of people who have been kidnapped in Iraq, just to briefly note that the father of Nicholas Berg, who was beheaded about 2 years ago, is running for Congress in Delaware.
That's interesting.
He's running on the Green Party ticket to try to unseat a seven-term congressman, Republican Michael Castle. And Michael Berg admits that he is getting into the political game as a response to the death of his son, acknowledges that as the Green Party candidate, he doesn't have a really big chance of winning, but he hopes that entering into the race will create some discussion about the wisdom of our incursion into the Middle East.
Hmm.
I hope that his entry into the race will also get some people asking why Zacharias Moussaoui's email password, mm-hmm. was on Nick Berg's laptop computer while Nick was a student at the University of Oklahoma.
Of course, Nick Berg said that, or maybe it was Moussaoui, but one of them said that they had met briefly on a bus.
Yes.
That's what sticks in my mind. And that Moussaoui had borrowed it.
To check his email.
Right.
Yeah. On a bus, a stranger, you're going to loan him your laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Not me. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No, and you know, I would also like to know more about Nick Berg. There were a lot of rumors flying at the time that, A, the videotape of his horrific execution, mm-hmm. looked, at the very least, suspect.
Yep.
That he may have been dead already.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that there were questions about why he was there. Was he actually some sort of an operative?
Well, the connection to the University of Oklahoma also raises some interesting questions.
Ah, yes, the Sooners.
The Sooners, because they had the bomb mm-hmm. which exploded outside the stadium last fall. But also Norman, Oklahoma is a nexus point for some of the events that took place prior to the bombing in Oklahoma City,
mm-hmm.
of the Murrah Building. Mm-hmm. So what was Berg doing there? What was Moussaoui doing there? And who else might have been in Norman, Oklahoma, that was connected to either the Murrah Building bombing or 9/11?
I think
or
the
both.
Person to ask there is someone over at Northeast Intelligence, because either Doug Hagman, mm-hmm. or can't think of the name.
Sean Osborne.
Sean Osborne, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot of research into that event.
Right. Well, and that's where I'm drawing a lot of this information. And I'm glad you brought them up, because that segues into the next story that I had here.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's interesting that the mainstream news is finally picking up on the story that the Northeast Intelligence Network has been trying to drive into the public consciousness for months now, and that is the threat posed by MANPADS, the mm-hmm. shoulder-operated missiles.
That's why I posted that today, because it's
good
in the
catch.
Mainstream news.
Brian Ross, the investigative reporter for ABC News, in fact, in the article, even mentions the incident at LAX last November,
mm-hmm.
which at the time was pretty much only being reported by the Northeast Intelligence Network.
Oh, yeah. Nothing to see here.
Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't a missile. You just saw a
bird.
Yes. Flaming
something.
Duck.
Nothing.
Fireworks.
Look over there.
Yeah. So it is interesting that ABC News has published a story. An investigative report Headlined, shoulder-fired missiles pose serious threat to passenger jets. Mm-hmm. No kidding.
We are seeing more and more stories like this that are peppered throughout the quote-unquote mainstream media news. Mm-hmm. Nuclear threat. That, in fact, there were a couple of stories about that today that I didn't necessarily post to Watcher. About how shipping lanes are so vulnerable to nuclear threats. Mm-hmm. Of course, we had the story a couple of days ago about how the borders, both north and south in the United States, were infiltrated by agents trying to see how safe the border was to nuclear, you know, a radioactive smuggling operation. And sure enough, they got through, mm-hmm. both through from Canada and from Mexico. We're hearing a lot about how vulnerable we are, how lousy our security is. We have a Dubai company that tries to come in and makes everybody nervous. Mm-hmm. You know what I feel like? I'm starting to feel like the sheep that are being nipped at, mm-hmm. by those shepherds, those Australian shepherds. Mm-hmm. They come and they nip at your heel just a little bit to get you to move. In other words, what I think is all of these stories are little nips to herd us into a particular direction.
Yeah. Now, what direction would that be? The direction of the stories seems to be there's a threat. Mm-hmm. And there is a threat coming from multiple different directions, a number of different directions. Mm-hmm. Our ports aren't safe. Well, of course, now that we've got the Red Chinese screening our cargo for nuclear, we're okay there. But other than that, the shoulder-fired missile story, mm-hmm. is one that just came out. It's almost as though it's preparing us for the next big event.
Mm-hmm. We're being told that this year's hurricane season is going to be equally bad, if not worse.
Mm-hmm. The Australians are getting ready for their second Category 5 cyclone in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, that cyclone is hitting their oil.
Their offshore
exactly, their
oil
ports.
Platforms?
Their big oil ports.
Mm. Interesting.
It's the equivalent of hitting Houston here.
Yeah. And so, and we're hearing talk from some quarters of a severe earthquake threat to the western and northwestern United States.
Mm-hmm. We keep hearing these drums that are beating about so many things, but it's the same thing over and over again. There's a nuclear threat to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Planes are in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow Iran is connected.
Yep. Yep. And, of course, Tom Horn has said publicly on a couple of interviews over the last 6 months that something was intercepted on the Arizona border, something referred to as Big Bird, which may well be unveiled at some point and tied to Iran and used as justification for military action.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what Big Bird is, and Tom may not know either. That's all the information we have, that sometime late last year, November, December time frame, something was intercepted trying to come into the United States from the south. And I wouldn't even be mentioning it now had Tom not mentioned it on an interview in another program that, mm-hmm. I heard. So it is, you know, out there and archived in the public domain.
But by the way, Tom did the Steve Quayle show tonight.
Yeah.
Great job, as always.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, he was the guest host. He wasn't a guest.
Mm-hmm.
He was the host, and he's going to be hosting again tomorrow night. So if you are a Tom Horn fan, and I know you are, you, mm-hmm. want to make sure that you listen to Steve Quayle's,
yeah.
show tomorrow.
Talking about RFID chips tomorrow night with an expert, Catherine Albrecht, who's written a book about it, and that should be a really good interview. In fact, tonight he mentioned one of our friends, author David Lowe,
yeah.
Earthquake Resurrection, and a very good observation David made about some of the key words and phrases used in the 2001 inaugural address by President,
yeah.
Bush.
Yeah, I had to go back and look that up. I remembered his saying that phrase several, mm-hmm. times, but I had remembered it. I didn't piece it together with 2001.
Yeah. Angel in the Whirlwind.
Yeah, sure enough.
Well, we've got a great interview tonight. It's the final part of our three-part interview with the investigators from New England Anomalies Research.
You know what? Parts one and two, I think, were chilling. I know they were for us when we were actually recording the interview. It just continues along that same line, and I am so looking forward to getting to these people back. So here we go with part three without any further delay.
Keith Johnson, Sandra Johnson, and Chris Finch of the New England Anomalies Research and Investigations team are with us. And yesterday we left off talking about upcoming ghost hunting classes. Can you tell us about that?
Sandra?
Well, actually, Keith is the instructor of the classes. We're teaching. I do assist him though. We teach amateur ghost hunters, people who want to get into this field. Basically, just starting out. It's not for people who have a lot of experience and pretty much know what they're doing already. It's more for amateurs that want to get into learning what we look for in photographs, learning how to record and analyze EVPs. We play some videos for them. We teach how to use equipment, what equipment to buy if you want to start purchasing equipment. What to look for, what not to purchase. In other words, for example, as far as buying thermometers, a lot of people will think, well, I'll just go down to Radio Shack and buy an infrared thermometer. Now, that and so many people make this mistake. An infrared thermometer will measure surface temperature. When you're investigating, you want to be able to measure ambient temperature. You want to be able to measure the temperature of the air. So what you want to buy is a thermocouple type thermometer, which will measure ambient temperature and will do it very quickly. But these are the examples of things that that the students will learn if they take the course.
Okay. Do you teach that at a local community college or college or?
It's actually an adult learning center.
Hmm.
And there are actually two locations: one here in Providence, Rhode Island, and then another in New Bedford, Massachusetts, as well.
Okay. And you have information about that linked at your website?
Yes.
Okay. Now, we've been talking off air about an episode of Ghost Hunter, which is the Sci-Fi Channel program on Wednesday nights, Keith,
yes.
That you were involved with that never made it to air. What was that about?
That was an episode about spirit possession. An older woman in Lewiston, Maine, had come under possession, apparently, and our friends Bill and Nancy, who run Maine Paranormal, had actually called us in to confer on this, knowing that we had experience in actual demon possession. And they wanted to have us confer with them and actually witness what was going on. So we did come up there as a small group to assist Bill and Nancy of Maine Paranormal. And we witnessed this woman going under what seemed to be spirit possession, and she originally claimed that, or at least she thought, the family thought, that she was possessed by a Canadian Frenchman who had died of lung disease and had apparently been buried in their basement, and she was getting possessed by this. I tended to doubt that personally. I tended to doubt it was a human spirit, so I did, subtly, I did religious provocation, which revealed it was not, in fact, a human spirit at all. It actually seemed to be a demonic spirit. So later on, a month later, we did come back to this house and for a deliverance session with this woman and another full investigation with other members of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, and it was actually filmed for the TV series for the first season. Unfortunately, it was never aired on the first season. It was advertised. It was advertised more than once, but they never did wind up airing it for reasons that are unclear. I was never told the exact reasons why it was never aired, but I did write it on the TAPS forum, the actual story of what went on, because we had a lot of requests like, why was this never shown? What actually happened? What was the story behind it? So I did write out the story on the TAPS forum, and so that's basically the story of that. It was never aired, though. And so they refer to it as either the possession episode or the lost episode, the episode that was never seen.
What was there unique about the episode? I mean, was it just, do you have a hunch? Was it just too frightening or that it just went too far afield from, it didn't have a happy ending or something? Or?
Actually, it didn't have a happy ending.
Okay.
Because the deliverance was apparently successful. The reason it was never aired is basically unclear as to exactly why it was never aired. I know the family, supposedly there was some suspicion that the family didn't want it aired. However, I spoke to the family personally, and they had their friends and relatives over there waiting for it to be aired because it had been advertised. They were all sitting in the parlor, and then it wasn't aired, so they were actually very disappointed. But as to why, I can't give an exact reason because I'm not sure myself exactly why it wasn't aired. I know it was a controversial subject matter, but I don't think that's the reason it wasn't aired, but, you know, then again, I can't say for sure. So.
Huh. Okay. Now, I noticed that you do a fair amount of work on the TAPS forum and on the TAPS website. You contribute a lot of information, stories, and articles and so on.
That's correct.
You've been working with these guys for quite some time?
Yes. Yeah, for several years. Several years I've worked with members of the Atlantic Paranormal Society.
Okay.
And I remember when it was, of course, a much smaller group before the television show.
Sure.
like a whole different story since the television show. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we branched off and founded our own group, because, you know, to do a television show, a reality television show, really requires a lot of time. A lot of time. And you watch the TV show, and, of course, they do time lapse where it's... They're going from here to say to St. Louis. They're going from Rhode Island to St. Louis. They do it in about 8 seconds. They make the trip.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Then it shows them reviewing the evidence in time lapse photography. But of course, I'm sure a lot of people realize that there's so much more that goes into this. That reviewing the evidence, getting to a place, the location, finding out if it's legit. So if you're doing a TV series, it's a whole different story. So. There's many people that are in need of help that they need it right away, and so that's basically why we formed our own group.
But I don't necessarily want to be on TV.
True, very true. You know, some people are very, very embarrassed about this. You know, like the people are going to think I'm nuts if they know I'm saying I have a ghost or I have a possession. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people, you know, really do not want it aired. So that's basically what we take care of.
Well, just for my own curiosity, let's go back to the story that didn't go to air for Ghost Hunter. Did you have any evidence that you collected at that particular investigation, video or audio or anything that you were able to hang on to?
Yes, actually, we did get some audio EVPs. We did get some EVPs there, and photographic as well. I was doing a blessing of the house. After the woman had gone out of possession, is when I started the blessing. It seemed to actually provoke her into becoming overcome, and the spirit took hold of her. After she had come out of possession for that time, I was finishing the blessing of the house. I was actually in the kitchen area. Somebody took a picture. Bill of Maine Paranormal actually took a digital photo of my wife and myself while we're doing the blessing. My wife had her back turned, and in the photo, you could see a large, what appeared to be an aquamarine globule, looked like it was almost resting on the back of her neck. Now, I'm sure you've heard this in cases of a spirit presence, especially if it's a demonic presence. People will often feel that the back of their neck is being touched. It's a very sensitive area. They feel like a burning sensation, or they're being touched in the back of their neck. I've seen this many, many times in cases where there is authentic paranormal activity. Now, the reason for that, it is believed that that's one entry point of a demonic spirit, is the base of the skull, because there's a ganglion mass there. It's a very sensitive spot spiritually. And some people report, like I said, they feel a tingling or a burning sensation in that spot. My wife wasn't feeling anything, but when I saw that picture, it was brought to our attention. I immediately said, well, we just don't want to take any chances. It could be kind of probing to see, you know, who's capable of being interfered with and who's not. So, of course, I prayed over my wife right away for her protection.
Mm-hmm.
So you were able to see that photograph on site.
It is on our visual evidence page.
Well, actually, by on-site, I meant at the time of the actual investigation, because you said you prayed for her. Was this, I guess I don't quite understand, you prayed for her later on, or you prayed for her during the investigation?
It was a digital photograph, so.
Oh, so you did see it right away.
Right, yeah, so we were able to see it right away. So, of course, we had prayed for protection beforehand, but when seeing that, I prayed specifically that, and I actually used blessed oil to anoint the back of her neck and said special prayer over her for her protection.
Now, is this, I see the one you mean. It's picture number 11 on the site?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Let me go to that.
That is...
Oh, my goodness.
Very, very obvious. But we'll definitely put a link to this in the show notes so that our listeners can see this as well. This is really it's hard to communicate this through the through the audio medium, but we'll link to this picture in the show notes so that you can take a look at this. It's very, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
You know, also off air, we were talking about the movie White Noise and what you seem to think about that. And Chris was explaining that sometimes the brain tries to make sense out of just a glob of noise. Or out of something, you know, like we were talking about clouds in the sky. Can you just address that movie and perhaps the misconceptions that are out there?
Yes. All right. White noise is supposedly you are able to feed white noise, either audio or visual, through a television set or through a radio, and supposedly the entity is able to contact you and you can hear EVPs through the white noise. The problem with this is a phenomenon called matrixing. It's a natural thing caused by the human brain trying to organize stuff that doesn't make sense. If you take white noise, static, or whether it be visual, such as crossing tree branches or wood grains on a door, or audio, such as static through the radio or through the television set, your brain tends to naturally pick out voices or shapes in the white noise.
Hmm. Have you ever run into that in your own investigations as something that you can rule out later on?
No, we tend not to use white noise at all.
Okay. What do you think about movies in general?
It's so controversial. You can't really back it up because the matrixing plays such a big role in it.
It's also very hard to remove when you go to clean up your EVPs and analyze them using the software. It's just very hard to clean the EVPs up. It's not worth using.
Mm. Now, White Noise, of course, is a movie, and Derek and I were telling you also off air that we watched The Exorcism of Emily Rose today. What do you think about Hollywood's portrayal of exorcisms and house blessings and hauntings?
I think it often tends to be very sensationalized. There's a lot of reality there, but there's a lot of sensationalism, too. The possession of Emily Rose, I think that was a rather realistic portrayal because it was based on an actual case of exorcism where the victim did unfortunately die, supposedly of malnutrition, and it was very controversial, and there was a big trial held afterwards over who was responsible for this young girl's death. So I think that's basically was a very accurate portrayal, at least of the controversy surrounding it. A lot of this is very, very sensationalized, And you'll get bits of reality here and there, but I know I remember very well when The Exorcist first came out, many people were frightened. Well, can this happen to me? Can this happen to me? Is this exactly what, am I going to turn into some kind of monstrosity like this? If I use the Ouija board, are spirits automatically going to come into me? And actual true spirit diabolical possession is rather rare. It's relatively rare to be actually fully possessed. It's much more common to be oppressed, to feel spirit oppression, because for possession to take place, there has to be a process of totally breaking down the human will, and usually that's not very, very automatic. It takes a long time for somebody to be pliable enough to actually have a spirit enter them. You almost have to invite it in through the law of invitation. So I think it's made a lot of people afraid, and it's very sensationalized. But, of course, there is some truth behind it, just like the movie Jaws. I mean, everybody was afraid to go in the water in 1975 when that movie first came out. But shark attack is actually, you know, very, very rare to actually be attacked by. Certain types of sharks will usually not attack at all. It's much more common to be hit by lightning on a golf course, and yet nobody was afraid to go on the golf course after the movie Caddyshack.
Best game of my life!
Yeah, the best game of my life!
Oh... Well, Derek, do you have any other questions?
Well, I just, again, as you mentioned, that things seem to be sensationalized. Do you see a danger in, well, let me ask a two-part question. First of all, do you see a lot of people wanting to become ghost hunters? And secondly, do you think there's a danger in approaching the topic without a proper understanding of the forces they're dealing with?
Yes to both questions. Yes, I do. I do see a lot more. There are many ghost hunting ghost hunting groups. We prefer the term paranormal researcher, but a lot of ghost hunting groups are cropping up more and more every day. I'm always having people emailing me, asking me for advice on how to get started. And yeah, I think there is a danger with trivializing it, because a lot of people don't realize, well, this is real phenomena, but it goes very deep. And a lot of these new groups will go into a situation, somebody's in real trouble, then they wonder, what's the next step? And I think, Chris, you had something to add about that?
Yes, the best way to explain it is if you've never gone hunting before, like actual going out for creatures and animals, you don't want to go out to the African savannah and try hunting down a male lion without, you know, any experience at all. You want to start small and get some education and work your way up the chain. It's much the same way. If you go into a situation, if you find yourself in a diabolical situation and you have absolutely no experience, it can be very dangerous.
That's a good way to explain that.
Yeah, it is, especially because the New Testament describes Satan as a roaring lion, you know, seeking whom he may devour. So. That's a very apt analogy.
If any of our listeners are curious about how to get involved in this, but more so if any of our listeners is experiencing something that they feel requires your research techniques, how do people contact you?
You can contact through our website, which you mentioned, near.s5.com, and they could also click on for assistance. And if they're in the area, they're certainly welcome to take one of our classes. We highly recommend that. And or email us and just let us know their questions.
And you guys are also participating in a weekly radio broadcast, online radio broadcast, am I right?
Yes.
And that's...
That is a show called Phenomena.
Okay, and we'll put a link to that. That's WCANradio.com, I believe. But I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's a very educating show, and that's how I stumbled onto you guys. And I'm glad we did, because this is a topic that has interested us, but we have wanted to approach this from what we believe is the proper perspective. And, you know, that starts with the historical evidence for the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And then basing everything that we experience in this world against that as sort of the guide for what's true and what's not. And honestly, there's an awful lot of untruth in this field. You know, of course, Hollywood looking to sensationalize things doesn't help at all. So we're glad that we found you, and we certainly appreciate your time and your information.
Is there anything, any other points you'd like to make, or anything else you want to say before we finish up today?
Yes, I have a brief audio clip of the actual possession that took place in Lewiston, Maine.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, it is a little bit disturbing to listen to. You hear the woman speaking in French. She speaks mainly in French, and her husband is translating for her. And if you'd like, I could play from that.
Absolutely,
oh, please,
absolutely.
Please,
all right, it is a little disturbing, but I'll play that.
Okay. She was not being physically harmed at all. This was simply because of reciting the name of Jesus Christ that seemed to put the spirit in so much pain. Do you know what she was saying in French?
She was yelling out curses to leave her alone, that she owns this woman, she likes her, and the spirit likes being inside of her, and that the name that I'm saying is tormenting her. That's basically essentially what she's saying.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you say this,
and,
this was from the episode that did not make it to air for the Sci-Fi
exactly,
Channel show?
Yes. Yep.
Well, actually, the recording is from the investigation that we did months prior to
the filming of the episode. It's the same case.
I see.
It's but it is the same family involved. But the episode we filmed was a follow-up investigation where the spirit did seem to be cast out of her, but unfortunately was never aired.
So that family had a good resolution. You said it had a happy ending?
And to this situation, it did, yes, to the actual spirit possession.
Well, praise God for that.
Yes.
Wow. Well, again, that should serve as a caution to anyone who thinks that this is just something really cool or neat to try as a way to fill up time on weekends.
Yeah, that's what really bothers me about the England show, Most Haunted,
right.
They make it look like it's almost a parlor game.
Yeah.
And this is not a game.
And I think that's a misrepresentation that their channeler, he always contacts these spirits, and he seems to go so easily in and out of it, whereas the actual authentic spirit possessions I've seen, it's not that easy. It's a very tormenting, exhausting situation where the person is very much in a state of torment, And anybody who goes through this or has seen it, they would never want to experience it themselves, because the person themselves is drained. They're losing a part of themselves. They're in such physical agony. They come out of it with long lapses of memory, memory displacement. They're in physical and emotional pain. And so that's what I think is a misrepresentation, when you see people just snapping in and out of it so easily.
And it's always a human spirit that right. they come in contact
right.
with.
Right, yeah, good point. It is. They always seem to come in contact with a human spirit that died in, say, the year 1690, and it's just too easy. It makes it look too easy and neat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Keith Johnson, Sandra Johnson, Chris Finch, New England Anomalies Research, we still appreciate your time, and boy, we look forward to seeing more of your work. I will definitely put show links or links in the show notes to your website, also to the sections of the forum and the TAPS website that you moderate and that your brother Carl moderate, for more information on what you do. And if we come up with more questions or get more from our listeners, as I'm sure we will, can we talk with you again at some point in the future?
Sure. Be glad to. Very glad to.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, God's blessings on everything you do, and may, the angels continue to fight on your side.
Thank you. May the Lord bless you.
All right. Thank you, and we appreciate you being with us on PID Radio.
Well, that wraps up everything with NEAR, at least as much as we were talking about the other day. We definitely want to get back with those guys.
Yeah, we had a wonderful conversation that continued long after the interview was concluded, and found that we share a lot of other interests.
Bonded.
Yeah. Keith and I talked about UFOs, and we talked about the Arthurian cycle. He's a bit of a scholar into the legends of King Arthur, and turns out he and his brother, Carl, are both also fans of Poe and H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Now, Lovecraft has gotten into some occultic stuff. So, again, read with discernment, and you have to read from the perspective of... it's almost educational, in a sense, in terms of looking into the mind of those who do seek after the occult and the old gods and the great old ones and so forth.
It's really enlightening when you do that. You actually study what the enemy believes. You have to do that, as you say, with great discernment, great prayer, but more than that, you have to have a mature spirit. You can't, if you just become a Christian, don't jump into that. Don't make that your first area of study.
But being from Rhode Island, which is where Lovecraft was, lived most of his life, they, of course, have an interest in the kind of things that he wrote about. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was a play about the life of Lovecraft, and Carl Johnson portrayed H.P. Lovecraft in that play. So,
isn't he related to him?
Yes, in fact, they're right. They did mention that there was a relationship to the Lovecraft family,
and that there was a slight family resemblance.
Yeah. So, interesting people, and
they
again,
really
we're
are.
Thankful to know them and to know that they are tackling this subject with some discernment, as opposed to just jumping in thinking that this is a lark.
Yeah, speaking of really dark and evil things, there's a story on Watcher Magazine today about a mother who found her son being molested, and she, of course, objected she was offered $600 to shut up.
This was a neighbor, a gentleman who was, in his 40s, I believe?
48.
Yeah, and when he offered her $600, she said okay, and allowed him then to continue with her 7-year-old son.
Yes. It's disgusting.
It is, disgusting is, I think, the beginning word that I would use, and go from there, but not on this podcast.
I know. Well, one more story I want to point out, and I think it's because it ties in, and you and I try really hard to connect dots, excuse me, on this show, and it's a story about a summit that was called for educators, and the summit is to have educators start to promote the idea that we're becoming a global community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what I find interesting about this is this has been done for the last 20 or 30 years.
Right.
Nicole grew up in a very, and she's actually, it's a relatively conservative school system. It's just that kids are being given the notion that you are a world citizen,
mm-hmm.
you know, take care of your earth, you know, things like that, because we all live here. It's a one big, happy community.
It's a small world after all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, the summit was sponsored by Clayton Homes. Do you remember Clayton Homes?
Yes, Clayton Homes, mm-hmm. which we remember was purchased just before last year's hurricane season by Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, and they make all of those prefabricated houses.
Mm-hmm.
So very quickly you can get a house up.
Yeah, and he won a huge contract from FEMA to supply manufactured homes to house many of the evacuees from Hurricanes Katrina, Rita, and Wilma.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
Just good timing. The kind of timing that has sort of marked his career as an investor.
I know. It struck me as really odd that Clayton Homes would be sponsoring this. You know, if Warren Buffett were not the head of this, would Clayton Homes, would a prefabricated manufactured home organization be sponsoring the World Globalization Summit for Educators?
No, you know, that does seem like that's
a software company. Well, Bill Gates actually did kick in, but Clayton Homes just doesn't jive in there for some reason.
Yeah, it does seem like it's a little outside of their normal scope. Why would a guy, a home builder, care about educating kids and teaching them that we are global citizens first and citizens of a nation
mm-hmm.
second?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well, I think that indoctrination is definitely taking place here, folks.
Yeah.
And Warren Buffett is, he's at the Warren Buffett buffet. And I think he's probably eaten all the pies, so.
Yeah.
Don't give him any pie.
Down at in the underground bunker below, off at Air Force Base in Omaha.
That's the truth. Or he'll move to Colorado Springs.
Yeah. Well, it's been another wonderful series of interviews. And tomorrow, of course, will be our end-of-the-week wrap-up, in which we'll just rant about various and sundry things.
And sorted things,
yeah.
We may sort things. We may sort, you know.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about this being a landmark week, a week in which I find myself agreeing with the ACLU and the NAACP in the same week.
I know.
Oh, yeah. I'm shuddering.
Well, honey.
I'm supposed to be a conservative.
It's frightening, isn't it?
I know.
You know, this whole notion of having to be on one side or the other, it's a strain.
It is a strain, and maybe that's why Sean Hannity is snapping. The strain of having to defend the policies of this administration against what he instinctively knows to be right and wrong is finally taking its toll, and the poor man is just losing his grip.
Poor Sean. You know, there is a character from The Nightmare Before Christmas, the mayor. I love that character because he has two faces.
Mm-hmm.
His head spins around depending on whether he's happy or sad.
Yeah. That's a very apt analogy.
It is.
Well, we welcome your comments on anything we discussed tonight or your suggestions for guests and, of course, tip-offs to articles that we may have missed.
Yeah.
Send those to radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And if you want to join us at the forum, go to peeringintodarkness.com/forum and sign up. It's free. And we'd love to have you there. Just bring a pie.
Show notes for tonight available at PIDradio.com. And until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Happy eating, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud.